Krishna, everybody. Thank you so much for coming. And on behalf of London College of Vedic Studies, LCVS, it's very nice to see you all and that you've dedicated this Saturday to learn and study a wonderful topic called Vedic parenting, obviously. So obviously a huge topic. But the beauty of London College of Vedic Studies and the teachers that we have here is everything is related to the Vedas. So obviously we know that the Vedas is such ancient scripture that it can really solve so many of the even modern issues that we have. So we have this Grace Trivandra Prabhu here, who we've seen many times also. So we're delighted to have his presence and talking about this wonderful topic today. Will there be a break for you?
Maybe.
Okay, there might be a break, there might not. Otherwise, if you need any facilities, there's water on the side, there's bathrooms, ladies and men respectively. And there is Govinda's downstairs, open from 12, if you need anything from there also. Otherwise, just let me know. My name's Bryony. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna, thank you for coming. I'm very grateful to be among all of you. At the beginning, we can chant the Mangala Charanam prayers. Om Ajnanati Virandasya Gnananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Vinitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manovishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sagana Raghunatham Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Sadhutam Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sagana Vitam Shri Vishakam Vitamscha Hey Krishna Karuna Sindhu, Dina Bandhu Jagat Pate, Kropesha Gopika Kanta, Radha Kanta Namostute, Tata Kanchana Gorangi, Radhe Vrindavaneshwari, Vrishabhanu Sute Devi, Pranamami Hari Priye, Vamancha Kalpatarubhyascha, Kripa Sindhu Vyevacha, Patitanam Pavanebhyo, Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. Shri Krishna Chaitanya, Prabhu Nityananda, Shri Advaita Gadara, Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Devya. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna Hare Hare, Hare Rama Hare Rama, Rama Rama Hare Hare.
So today we are going to discuss a very broad topic about married life, about Grihastha Ashram. So, if we are going to talk about Grihastha Ashram, first we can talk a little bit about marriage, about the Vivaha Yagya. So we are following Vedic tradition, Brahma Madhva Gaudiya Sampradaya. We have great teachers, acharyas in our tradition, like Gopal Bhatta Goswami. And he compiled or put together a beautiful work, which is applicable for Grihasthas in this age of Kali, in Kali Yuga, which is called Shatkriya Saradipika. It's a book about 10 basic samskars. Is there somebody who doesn't know what is a samskar? Yeah, samskar means impression on the mind. So that basically there is a book about 10 like the main, let's say, experiences of life in the life of a human being, especially a person who is spiritually inclined, practicing
trying to become a devotee, a Vaishnava. So that book is called Kshatriya Saradipika. If you don't have it, you can download it on the internet. So it's translated into English. And there you have the 10 samskars that can be performed on a human being from birth till death. So it's the whole human life is comprised there. So, as we all know, human life begins with procreation. And procreation should be there among married people. That's ideal. So what we are going to talk, it's always ideal. But we have to be practical as well. So sometimes we have to adjust. So marriage is called Vivaha. The marriage ceremony, Vivaha Yagya. And we can say that's the beginning of the Grihastha Ashram, two people coming together for the purpose of having family and practicing spiritual life, material life together, helping each other. So it begins with marriage, and as you probably know, in India there's first marriage and then there is love. In the West it's the opposite: first love, then marriage, and then divorce. So there is a saying in West: love at first sight, divorce at first fight. So we try to avoid that. And in India, based on the Vedic scriptures, we have like prearranged marriages, which is a very interesting topic. It's another topic for another big seminar. We are not going to discuss it in big details, but we can mention a few important principles. So what is important is compatibility of the partners. You have two people, man and woman. And there are three principles in compatibility. The first one is the age. The age, men should be older than woman, because women, they mature very quickly, and it's due to philosophical explanation, due to the position of the soul being female principle towards God, being subordinate to God. So in the woman's body, for the soul to express, it's easier. So that's why you have the girls, little girls, like being 2, 3, 4 years old, and they already walk around with the babies, and you know, they play Barbie and Ken have marriage, and they have a small kitchen from IKEA, and they cook tea, and they play like a married life, you know, like responsible married life, we can say. But for men, it's harder, you know, to express. It's like men's quality, so the man requires more training, and you can see like sometimes men, they mature and very lately. Sometimes they don't mature for a whole life. Yeah, if there is no proper training. So it's a bit problem for the society. And therefore we have the whole science of human life, which is called the Ayurveda. So Ayurveda is not just about some massage and some spa treatment, but it's also describing the philosophy, psychology of a human mind, and it also describes the universal principles and how we can apply them in our day-to-day life. So the age should be there compatible. It says, sometimes it says the man should be from 6 to 10 years older than woman, sometimes from 7 to 10. That's ideal. And you can see, if the nature of men and women is similar,
and if they're of the same age, normally the woman is older than the man. I remember when I was 6 years old, then my cousin, she was also like, she was 5 years old, but she was born almost the same date as me, and I didn't know how to wear shoes properly, so she actually tied like my shoes properly, and everybody was laughing at that. She's like more mature than me, of course. By psychology, it works like that, you know. So that's the first thing that in compatibility that should be considered is the man should be older than a woman. The second thing should be, as I mentioned, the nature should be similar. We have four types of people in the society. We have the brahmanas, the intellectuals, the kshatriyas, the governing people. We have the vaishyas, which is the bourgeois, like the business people. And then we have the shudras, which are like the common workers, artistic people, soldiers, policemen, and so on. So there should be match between those two, ideally from the same class of society. There should be a compatibility. It's called anuloma, which means it's with hair, you know, like the direction of the growth of the hair, anuloma. So Brahmin boy from Brahmin for Brahmin girl, and one class down is allowed. So it means like Kshatriya girl can marry a Brahmin man, but a Kshatriya man shouldn't marry a Brahmin woman, because that's called, or the anuloma, it's called pratiloma, which means against the hair. It's not good for the psychology of the child. So it's important you find a person, or you prearrange the marriage according to the same caste. It's pretty important. The caste is not by birth, it's by qualities and by work, guna karma. As Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Chaturbhanam Ashrishnam guna karma vibhagashaha. It doesn't say janma vibhagashaha. It doesn't say it's by birth, it's by work and by qualities. Of course, in Kali Yuga, in this age, we all get born as Shudras. A Shudra is at least a human being. So we're all born like vegetarian. First we drink mother's milk, and then we degrade, or the society degrades us, and then we turn like mlechas, yavanas, antyajas, untouchable people, you know. We're talking about Vedic society now. So we can develop the character and qualities by spiritual life. So even though you might be born in some kind of family, your nature may be completely different. So that's what happens in this age in Kali Yuga. People are mixed. Everything is just like mixed up. It's called a multicultural society, which you can see around. Everything is just mixed up. And then what is the produce? The progeny is Varna Shankar. They're like confused people. They don't know who they are, where they belong, what they should do, what is the goal of life. And they create like a havoc in the society. So there's like classification in the society. It's in every society of the world. We have Brahmanas, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, and Shudras. Even the tribes in Amazonia, they have their king, they have their shaman, they have their trade people, and they have their like workers or hunters and so on. So it's everywhere. It should be done. The society should be run scientifically according to Vedas, according to this Varna Ashram Dharma system. Who doesn't know what is Varna Ashram Dharma? Yes, Varna Ashram Dharma basically means classifying the society into the intellectuals. For them, anarchy is prominent as a political system. They depend on God and nobody else. So that's Brahmins. Then you have the Kshatriyas. For them, monarchy as a political system is prominent. So they have to rule the country. Their duty is to protect the society. So they use violence for protection. They train in martial arts so they can deal with the negative aspects of the society. Then we have the Vaishyas, which is like the business class of people. they run the economy, so their duty is economical development, artha. And then we have the Shudras, like the common class of people, they help everybody else. So they're like helpers of the higher classes. So in this way, we have the four varnas, and then we have the four stages of human life. The first stage is the student life, then we have the married life, then we have the retired life, and then the renounced life. Four types of ashrams. In which a human being can practice spiritual life. So basically this Varnashram Dharma Society is aimed or is done in such a way that one can progress gradually from materialistic consciousness into a spiritual Krishna consciousness. So the nature of both partners should be similar. It doesn't matter like what type of human race you can belong to, because in the universe you have basically 400,000 species of human beings. You have sometimes very strange type of beings, like the Kinaras or Kimpurushas. They stay in the forest sometimes, and some people they meet them. One of my neighbors in Slovakia, he met with such a beings, you know, like they're like, Kimpurusha means by their name like, what kind of person is it? It's like, if you meet him in the night in the forest, you like, you can be scared because he's like, his head is like a triangle and pointed ears and like strange eyes, and you would say like aliens, right? So we have many types of beings in the universe, human beings. So the race is not that important. What is important is the compatibility of the nature of the psychological mindset. That's what is important in the compatibility. Because if you mix two colors, the same colors here, like you mix yellow and yellow color, what is the result? You have yellow color, right? So that's what the Manusmriti or the Manusamhita talks about when it speaks about the jati, like mixing the same type of varna, the same type of society class. So that's basically mixing the same colors. Like, for example, if two teachers, man and woman, they have family, they have kids, and you can see their kids are like nerds, you know, like big classes, you know, they like study all the books, you know, they finish all their education, like university in 18 years old, PhD, they're already done, you know, and they're like very intellectual people. So that's what happens when you mix similar. Then what happens if you mix different colors? Like if you mix yellow, for example, with green color, what color do you get?
Blue.
Yeah. So you have two people, they're different people, and their child is also different from them. So that is very, very difficult to run the family if you have three different type of people. So it's difficult to find some understanding in the family, isn't it? So that's what is not very much recommended, but unfortunately, that's what is happening today in the world. That's why it's called Varna Shankar. Varna means like a color, it's like mixing different colors, then you are getting some strange results. What is the worst mixing is actually like if the Shudra men, like very low class men, mingles with like Brahminical lady, like with intellectual lady. That's the worst, because then you get a child which is like, which has the intelligence of the mother but the character of the father. So then you're getting like a Hannibal. You know Hannibal? It's very like intellectual person, psychologist, or whatever, or surgeon. Yet he's a cannibal, you know, he eats other people. I know people like that living among us. You might meet them on the street. They may look very beautiful, like gentlemen, you know. They say hello to everybody. They dress in a suit. But then invite other people for tea or coffee in their house. And then the police raid the house and they found there's like different limbs cut and head in the fridge and frozen. It's like mass murderer. And this is what happened in USA. There was a mass murder like that. Everybody thought he's like a perfect gentleman. He was inviting people for tea, and he would put some poison in a tea, and that was it. You know, so like, this is what you get when you mix like a low class man with a high class woman. So that's called pratiloma. It's not recommended. And the third thing that should match in the compatibility, that's called the gana, which means it's a type of being. What type of being it is, whether it's like divine, demoniac, or it's like a human. So you have three types of gana: rakshasa gana, you have manushya gana, and then you have daiva gana. So daiva gana means like divine people, like very like divine beings. If you meet them, they're like shining. Then you have the rakshasic type of people, like more demoniac by appearance, also by psychology. And then you have like the humans, or like, which is like manushya, or like human type. So these three things, they have to be considered in compatibility. If you have any questions, doubts, or have some comments, you can raise your hand and we can discuss it. Yes?
How much older a man can be, more than 10 years?
Well, from 6 to 10 years, that's ideal. But then there is a mention in Manusmriti, also in Ayurvedic scriptures, there is a mention that a woman, she can be half the age of a man, which is like, wow, oh my God. Surprising, like a 50-year-old man marrying a 25-year-old man, a woman. So it is allowed. There's nothing wrong about it. Like, married life is there to realize the futility and emptiness of material life, and everybody has to go through it sooner or later, from up, from the higher being of the universe, like Brahma, down to the smallest insect, the Atma Gupta. So now, from the top to the bottom, everybody has to go through married life. And those who are born and they live in a lifetime celibacy, they're called Naishtika Brahmachari, it means they have already realized the emptiness of married life in previous lives, and now they can just renounce everything. So that's called Naishtika Brahmachari. I don't know if you know the Niti Shastras, like Chanakya Pandit, he compiled the moral codes. They're still being taught in India. They're called Niti Shastra. There's a saying which says, if you're not sure whether to eat or not to eat, you shouldn't eat. Because if you're hungry, nobody has to tell you you're hungry, you should eat. But if you're not sure, it means you're not hungry yet. It means if you eat and you not digest, you'll get indigestion. As we know in Ayurveda, indigestion is like the cause of many diseases. Metabolic disease. So if you're not sure whether to eat or not to eat, you shouldn't eat. Whether you are sure or not sure whether to travel or not to travel, you shouldn't travel. It won't be auspicious. And whether you're not sure whether to get married or not to get married, you have to get married. Because you don't have the realization yet. Because if you have the realization that for sure you are certain you're not going to get married. Because married life can be also very blissful, but can be very miserable as well. So you get the both ups and downs, and this is what the material life is about. It's dukkhalam ashashvatam. It's temporary and it's full of miseries. Fortunately, we have, by the mercy of Krishna, we have the spiritual practice, bhakti yoga, and we can spiritualize even the material married life. So that's what we are going to talk about today, Grihastha Ashram. So Niti Shastra, you can find many interesting quotes, verses, and analogies. So this is what is being taught even today in India and schools. Niti Shastras are like moral codes, so it's very helpful.
You you mentioned last time that when people get married, they're together for six lifetimes. Is that correct?
Yeah, if they perform that Vivaha Yagya, that marriage ceremony, according to Vedas, then they commit to each other, to the relationship for six lifetimes. In the West, we commit for one lifetime, isn't it? There is a saying, what God unites, men shouldn't disunite, or something like that. I don't know exactly. Yeah, so for one lifetime, but in East, in India, it's for six lifetimes. You commit to each other. So we have eight types of marriages. Mostly we know one type of marriage, isn't it? You say yes or no, that's it. But in the Vedas there is a description about eight types of marriage. You have different types. I don't know if you have to go through it, but the most recommended type of marriage is pre-arranged by the parents. And we can see by the results, what is the result of pre-arranged marriage? Very stable and strong society, like in India, what we have. Even today, even in Kali Yuga, still there is only 1% of the divorce rate in India. In the West, we have 50% and plus some countries even have 70% of divorce rate. So it's a very bad situation for the society, because the family is like the basic unit of the society. So the marriage should be there, Vivaha Yagya. So we are not going to discuss it more into detail. If you have any question, you can ask it now, or you can be silent later.
These days, the people, they live together, they have children as well. I mean, they have families.
Without marriage.
Without marriage. Well, what is their situation?
You can say it's like the fourth type, or it's the fifth type of marriage, which is called Gandharva Vivaha, which is a marriage of like out of love. Oh, okay. But it's not like really love, it's more lust. It's based on lust. Yes. And people feel insecure getting into marriage because they're afraid of divorce and all the legal procedures, losing their property, so they tend to just be like a boyfriend and girlfriend relationship. Yes?
It's slightly off on a tangent, but someone once told me there's no real love in this material world. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, like Prabhupada would say, fall in love, fall in lust. The real love is bhakti. And then bhakti gets perverted. That bhakti is for Krishna and for his devotees, his spiritual love. This is the original love of the soul. And when it gets perverted in the material world, it's called kama. So from prema, you get the karma. Karma means it's for yourself, you're at the first place, and prema is for the other person. So it's selfless. So prema is like a selfless love and service, and karma is like selfish love and service. So there's a difference between who is the object of love. If it's just you, or if it is God, if it is Krishna. Like today in the esoteric field, it's very popular to talk about self-love. You heard about that one before? At least in Slovakia now, it's very, very popular. Like there's a wave coming and just like self-love, and it's being taught like self-love seminars, and we should love ourselves first, then we can love everybody else. But I'll tell you a news: a self-love doesn't exist. There's no love for the self. It's like, if you're going on a date with yourself, then you put a mirror in front of you, you buy yourself a dinner, then you take the wine and you say cheers with the mirror, and like, you know, and then you say, I love myself. It's like, it doesn't work. It's like, it's really strange, you know. What works is the self-respect. Self-respect is based on the self-realization, who we are, what is the self, that we are soul. And we respect that we are a soul, we are a servant of God, and we act accordingly. So that's the real self-respect, but it's not self-love. Because self-love doesn't exist for us. We are meant to love somebody else. And that's what makes
us happy, if we love somebody else, not if we love ourselves. So it's also important to understand. Yeah. So we have marriage, and then after marriage, there is the preparation to have a child. So because even that your Chanakya Pandit, he says that married life without a child is empty. It's like, why would you get married if you don't want to have children? It's like, do you feel insecure being alone? Or why would you get married if you don't want to have children? What is the purpose of such a marriage? Of course, it's different if you can't have children, but at least the desire to have a child should be there. So we're going to discuss that now. What is the way how to get the children properly? So we have the ritual. Ritual means the period of for conception. Ritual. Ritual means a season, call a time. What is the right time for conception? Right? It's very important to plan the parenthood, not just, you know, jump into it immediately after marriage. But there is some plan. There is also saying that the future belongs to those who plan it. Or if you fail to plan, you plan to fail. You know that one? If you fail to plan something, then your plan is to fail in it. So basically we have the planned parenthood according to Ayurveda. And that time, the ideal time for procreation is winter season and the spring season. Because in winter season and spring season, the sun is the closest to Earth, to Bhumandala. And no, in winter and spring, it's the most far away from Earth. So it means your body is the strongest during this time, in winter time and in spring time. So that's the best time for conception, because your sexual energy, that Shukra Natava Dhatu, is the strongest at this time. That's why Ayurveda recommends for conception the season of winter and spring. That's the best time to do it. Then you can have very strong, healthy children, progeny. It's really important, because nowadays there is a lot of miscarriages. Like since 1970s, by statistics, we had over 8,412,894 like natural miscarriages. It means people, they planned their parenthood, but it failed. There was a miscarriage. So over like almost 50 years, it was 8 million worldwide. So it's interesting. Isn't it interesting? Even though people plan it, they fail. Because they don't follow the signs. We have the signs described in the Vedas. The Vedas, they're like manual for human life, how to live the human life properly. And you try your best, and Krishna will do the rest. There is a, you know, the formula for success in Mahabharata. Who read the Mahabharata? Or who didn't read it? Yeah. So in Mahabharata, you have formula for success. Do you know what it is? Somebody knows? No?
Just do your job and leave it to God.
Do your job and leave it to God. Yeah, but one thing is missing. It's what Yudhishthir, he describes the formula for success. First, you must have knowledge. Gyan, you must have knowledge. And then you have to perform the endeavor
based on that knowledge. So you do the karma with Gnan. And then you leave the result on God. So you depend on God, so that's called bhakti. So this is also the essence of Bhagavad Gita, because as we know, Bhagavad Gita is the most important part of Mahabharata. So this is the formula of success. You do the activity based on knowledge, yet you leave the result up to Krishna, up to God. So if you plan your parenthood, it can be more successful if you do it according to Vedas. Not just like, okay, today we're going to do it, and then be ready, you know, in 5 minutes. It's not like that. You prepare yourself. It takes some time. So first thing, you plan your season, winter or spring season. The next thing, what you plan is... Yes?
About the two seasons, winter and spring, they seem a little different in that winter seems a time when, even if you see like animals and other creatures, it's a reclusive time, whereas spring things start to sprout and grow, which is why it seems a little counterintuitive. Like, I'm not sure why, because the body's also weaker in the winter, you're more susceptible to illnesses, depending on obviously.
Yeah, people get more sick in the Christmas time, but it's not because it's the winter, but it's because they overeat. As we know, Christmas in this age and time in the society means like overindulgence in drinks, foods, and gifts. It's not about the family and about Christ. So from Christmas it becomes Xmas. They remove the Christ and just put X there. So that's why people are most sick at Christmas time. But it's not because it's winter, but it's because the overeating. And what we do, we have it upside down. We think in the winter we should be sleepy, relaxed, we shouldn't do anything, we should just eat and be lazy. But Ayurveda describes that you have to be most active in winter, because at that time in winter season you have most energy, your body has the most, the best metabolism, the best energy. And then from that, the result is the best type of, the best quality of sexual energy, shukra and artha dhatu. So that's why the procreation is advised for the winter season and then the spring season. Yes?
Well, that also depends on climate, because if we talk about India, maybe winter is really the best season, because summer is just impossible. It's impossible to be warm. But we are from Siberia, when actually traditionally winter was time when people just sit in their homes. Well,
it's very Russia?
Cold and it's,
in Russia?
Yes,
in Siberia.
I mean, due to climate, winter is more hot season to survive, and summer is a time when people like more active just because of climate. But I mean, how to view to this?
You can also look at it from the point of view of child. Like for example, if you have if you beg a child in December, then it will be born in summer, and then the child has a higher tendency to survive. Because if you beg it later and the child is born in winter, it's difficult for the child to survive in such a cold weather, isn't it? So if, even from the point of view of child, it's much better to be born in at the end of summer, the beginning of autumn.
People who live in countries like Siberia, you mentioned, or Russia, cold countries, are they naturally stronger, do you think?
Yeah, they can be stronger because they have to deal with the very strong conditions. Like, you know, the Nazis, they went to Russia and they almost got into Moscow. But then Hitler, he said, no, we're going south for the oil fields. So then he stopped there just like 300 kilometers before Moscow. So then the
the really cold winter in Russia started at that time, and Stalin, he called for the soldiers, the units from Siberia. So the Siberians, they were really tough, and they survived, like, and then they could fight the Nazis were just dying out of, like, cold winter, and the Siberian soldiers are very strong, stout, very flexible, dealing with the cold weather. Yeah. So you can see sometimes people living in cold weather can be very strong. But it also depends on diet and other things. But we're not going to discuss that, so, because our topic is a bit different. So we have the Ritu Kal, the period of conception, so the first season. The second thing what is considered is the 12 days after the menstruation cycle stops. So there is a menstrual care according to Ayurveda that should be followed during the menstruation for a lady, for a woman. It's called Rajasvala Paricharya. So let's say it's winter and you plan to have a child. So what you do, you look for that menstruation period, which should be normally from 3 to 6 days in a normal healthy woman. So even that is a time where you can start the preparation already. So there's a whole description in the Bhava Prakash scripture about that. That the lady, when the menstruation cycle starts, and after the menstruation she's going to beg at the child, then she should go to a secluded place in the house. That she shouldn't take baths. She put any cosmetics on her body or oils. She should sleep like on the floor, eating simple food. She shouldn't laugh or cry, walk too much, exercise. And basically what she can do for like 4 days is self-study, svadhyaya. She should study the scriptures, chant, this mantra meditation, japamala. That's what she can do. And after 4 days of being secluded, not even seeing the husband or any man from the family, then after 4 days she takes the bath. And then the first person she sees after the bath, that's what the child will resemble. Do you understand? So for example, if she wants the child to look like a husband, that's the first person she should see after 4 days. It's like austerity, doing tapasya. Or if she wants the child to look like Krishna, then she should look at Krishna. Or like the beloved person. So this is psychology, you know, it's like, it's very deep actually. You can say, no, it's some kind of mythology. No, it goes very deep. Yes?
So when you say that the first person she sees will be the first person her child will resemble,
yeah.
Do you mean in terms of character? As well, not just physically.
In terms of
character,
yeah,
or is it more physically?
Yeah, also character, but also like the physical appearance. So if you want him to look like Tom Cruise, then you look at the picture of Tom Cruise or like, you know, Brad Pitt, whatever. Or if you want like Chad like Krishna, you know, then you look at Krishna. So it happens, it works like that also. And then you have the 12 days after the menstruation stops. That's the best time for the procreation. So that's called the Ritu Kal. So at the 12 days. And then when you count even days, you get a male child. And add days, odd days, you get a female. You understand?
There's more than
that's
one.
That's a conception, time of conception.
Yeah, the day of conception.
There's more than one description for a man, male and female.
There's more. This is the most basic astrological concept. Yeah. So in even days, you try for male, and the odd days for female, after the menstruation stops. So you have to count it. Then for conception, you have to avoid like full moon, new moon. You have to avoid ekadashis, special festivals, or like religious festivals. So you try to avoid these days.
Why we should avoid?
Because at that time it's inauspicious to do like more materialistic activities. Because having sex is like more materialistic. Even though it can be based on spiritual principles, still it's not auspicious to have sex on Ekadashi, for example. Yeah. So you look for the auspicious days. Then, of course, there's much more. You can have like astrology being done, and then the nakshatras are considered. Then you can also decide by the nakshatra what would be the mentality of the child. Because you have 27 basic nakshatras, they change every day. The nakshatras, they are the wives of moon, and the moon, he stays with a different wife every day. So based on that, you can also plan the character of the child based on the nakshatra sign. Like, for example, if you want to have like very critical person, being very critical, then if you go for the Kritika nakshatra. Or if you want a person to be like Rohini, the wife of Krishna, then you go for Rohini. So you can plan not just the gender, but you can also plan the character. And of course, what is most important is that the two partners, they discuss it and then they plan it together. Like, He wanted some brahmachari to have as a child, to be like renounced and preacher and sankirtan leader and so on. And she wanted a business person, you know. So the child is born, and he tends to go around the world, going to different festivals and like spiritual festivals, Hare Krishna festivals. But yet he wants to make some money, so he brings some stuff from India and he sells it on the festivals. It's a true story actually about like the misplanning of the both partners. It happened to a devotee couple. So you can plan also the physical appearance, the psychology. So many things can be done, but ultimately you have to always depend on Krishna. Because there is also description in the Bhava Prakash and the other Ayurvedic scriptures that also what decides the gender is the strength of the partner. So if the male is stronger, then the male progeny can be born. And if the female is stronger sexually, then the female child can be born. Yes?
So on that particular point, can you just elaborate? Because I read somewhere also that by having certain foods or fasting, the male body can be made stronger, the female body can be made stronger, so you can choose the gender.
Yeah, that's a very good question. Yeah, actually, you can adjust the strength, the sexual strength of the people. So for ladies, if you want to strengthen the female energy in ladies, then you go for a herb called Shatavari. Shatavari means she can have hundreds of husbands or hundreds of children. And that's what women in India take, and that's why they are so fertile, like the second most fertile nation in the world.
and we are dying out in the European Union. It's good trying to leave as a Brexit because we are just dying out. It's like the ship that is sinking, you know. You're laughing, but it's a serious topic because from since 1980s, over 30 years, over the span of 30 years, the male fertility went down very rapidly from 80% down to 4% only. And we are talking about the sperm count that can actually fertilize the egg. So 30 years ago it was 80%, and today it's only 4%. So some scientists who did the research all over the world, they're talking about some extinction of Homo sapiens species, not on the like some war or some natural catastrophe, but infertility. So for female it's Shatavari, and for male it's Ashwagandha. So these two herbs, they're like the most basic herbs to strengthen your fertility in male and female. And you boil them in the milk. So best if you get the powder and you can boil it in the milk. So this is for female and this is for male energy. And there's so many foods like that, like dates, figs, pomegranate, banana, blueberries, grapes, they increase fertility. That's from fruits, from vegetables. You have the asparagus, then you have cucumber, pumpkins. From grains, you have wheat, rice. From legumes, you have urad dal. You know urad dal? So that increases fertility. The milk products, like the cow's milk, increases fertility. Ghee, butter. So all these foods are aphrodisiac. Aphrodisiac does not only mean that it makes you lusty, like Viagra. It also means increases the fertility. So there is a different concept of aphrodisiacs in Ayurveda and the modern concept. The concept of aphrodisiacs means like to induce lust and the sexual desire. But in Ayurveda, the concept is to induce and strengthen the fertility, because in Ayurveda it's the conception, like the sex is for conception, but in the West we have sex for enjoyment. So there is a different approach for the same topic. Yes?
So just on that point, so in terms of all of these different things, what's the order of significance? If, for example, someone has karma, a certain type of karma, can they do all of these things to, let's say, have a female child and still get a male child? How does it work? Does this fully...
Karma can be adjusted by the mercy of Krishna. So if you follow the system, yet you leave the goal on Krishna, the result on Krishna, it can be adjusted. That's why the system is there. So it can be planned, it can be adjusted, but that depends on Krishna, of course.
So he may not do it.
Yeah. So because if we become a devotee, then your life is under control of Krishna karma. Krishna controls your karma directly. But if not devotee, then it's Maya karma. It's the illusion controls the life. So we try to avoid that. So we try to work on that Krishna karma. Do you have more questions regarding the fertility?
What's a useful resource to get all the descriptions that you mentioned just now?
There are different resources. You have the scripture Bhava Prakash, Sushruta Samhita. Do you want me to write it down?
Yeah, you can.
Yes, please.
There are chapters called Garbha Prakarana in those scriptures, where there's a description about these things. So these two scriptures you can study to know more about embryology and sexuality. It's also interesting who comments or who translates these scriptures from Sanskrit into English. Because in both scriptures and the beginning of embryology, there's a description that when the sperm and the ovum, when they mix inside in uterus, that's the time when the soul enters into the fertilized egg. And the other one, the Bhava Prakash, says that's the time when the soul is created. And then it continues about the description of the soul, that the soul is eternal. So how can it be eternal when it's created? Because eternal means without beginning and without end. It's endless. So what is created is destroyed also. So it's not eternal, it's temporary. So it's contradictory. And I think it's the author who translated it. He got that Christian concept of procreation. Because in Christianity, this is the concept. When the sperm and ovum, when they mix, that's when the soul is created. That's the creation. But how can the soul be eternal when it's created? You know, the soul can be only eternal if it doesn't have a beginning or an end. That's the logical explanation of eternity. But in the Srimad Bhagavatam, in the third chapter, Srimad Bhagavatam, third chapter, third canto, 31st chapter, and first verse, if you want to read more about it, 331 first, there's a description that the soul enters the womb of the mother through the semen of the father. So it's not created at the time of sex, but it's actually just coming inside through the semen of the father. So in that verse there is the word reta kanashreya, which means the particle of soul, the atomic soul, which is very small, like 1/10,000th of a hair, resides within the semen of a father. So that's the Srimad Bhagavatam. So we have to consider also who comments, what is the tradition that this knowledge comes from, because we also might get confused. That's why I have to study the scriptures based on the Srimad Bhagavatam commentaries. Because if you study on your own, you'll get confused without any tradition. If there is no tradition, if there is no parampara, the disciplic succession of teachers and students, then it's just a confusion. So that's what the modern Ayurveda is about. It's just full of confusion. The difference between the traditional Ayurveda and the modern Ayurveda is the traditional one is based on the spiritual knowledge of the Vedas. So it aims towards changing the lifestyle and the consciousness of human being, aiming towards the goal of life, which is to develop love for God. So also the diet in traditional Ayurveda is like sattvic, lacto-vegetarian. But in modern Ayurveda, people are just confused. And there's also meat eating, alcohol. There's so many things that shouldn't be there. Yes?
So about the 27 nakshatras and choosing the personality of the Charles, like where do we find a list of the
well, that's described in the Jyoti Shastra, in the astrology. So astrology is another topic, huge topic. So for that you have to be genius to be like astrologer. It's not easy to be astrologer, to count everything by hand, by brain. How they would do it in the past. Nowadays it's just computer does all the work. Some computer astrological program, you just type all the details and you got the results immediately. That may also bring confusion. Well, you can study about the nakshatras. I think in Bhagavatam and Puranas you also have some mentions about the nakshatras, but we're not going into that deeper because we have many things to discuss yet. So it is important to plan it within the 12 days of the Ritu Kala, within the auspicious season of winter and spring. Yes?
Is the 12 days from the end of the menstrual cycle
and
or from the first day?
From the end. From the first day would be 16 days. Yes?
You know when you said the time of conception?
Time. So we talk about season, days,
sorry.
And now we're going to talk about the time.
No, sorry, not the time. You know when the even days for male child and odd days for female. So when the male and female unite, is that the conception or is when the egg and the sperm unite? When is the conception? Do you calculate? Because that's very hard to calculate because you don't know when the egg and the sperm will unite because the sperm will travel slower for female believer and faster for male one. So if you unite on an even day, would you expect that?
That's the time of the union. Time of the union that is counted. Day of the union, the season of the union, and then of course it can happen later, but we count the time. So to talk about the time, you have the muhurtas, the science of the muhurtas, which is also described in astrology, the auspicious and inauspicious time. So we have a story about that in the Srimad Bhagavatam, the story about Diti and Kashyapa Muni. It's in the third canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. Do you know the story? Who doesn't know the story? So basically, Diti, she approached her husband in improper time. It was the time of sunset, which is very inauspicious for procreation. So the sunrise, the midday, and the sunset, they are called the Trisandhya. They're inauspicious times for our conception. They're auspicious times for meditation, but not for a conception. So Diti, she approached her husband to have a child, and she wanted it now, here and now, and yesterday was late. So this is also the psychology of the woman. If they want something, they want it now, and even yesterday was late, you know, or to speak of today. So it must be done, you know, there is no way out. You know that? You have that experience sometimes? If you want something, it must be now. The man, he can wait. You know, he can do some tapasya, some austerity, he can save some money, then he'll later buy some car. But the woman, she wants it now, you know. She'll take loan, borrow money, or steal, or whatever. So this was the problem of Diti. She, out of false respect, because of her sister or co-wives, they already got children, so she wanted to have a child also out of respect. So her intention was wrong. She wanted to have a child because of society respect. So she approached Kashyapa, and Kashyapa, he was trying to talk her out of it. He said, "This is not a good time. I haven't finished my prayers. You're disturbing." Basically, he was telling her, "Disturbing me," but in a very cultured way. You can read about it, it's like very beautiful. It's like when this conversation happened, it's very cultured, but he was basically telling her, you know, don't bother me now, you know, give me a break, I'm doing my prayers. This is not a good time. But she was very persistent, and so what happened with him, he got aroused sexually, and he couldn't control his senses. So even though it was not the proper time, they did it, and the result was very bad. The result was that the two biggest demons, Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyaksha, got born. So from that name, Hiranyakashipu, we can derive the consciousness of the parents. So the son, they're two brothers, twin brothers who got born from that inauspicious union. Hiranyaksha in translation means he's always looking for gold,
means very, he's a very greedy and lusty person for gold. And Hiranyakashipu in translation means someone who is into gold, and soft beds means like sex. So that was the sex desire that came from the father, and the desire for respect, for opulence, came from the mother. So that's why Hiranyakashipu. It's interesting because in those sunsets and sunrises, that's the time when Shiva, Lord Shiva, goes around, and he's called Bhutanath. So he's worshipped by ghosts and spirits because he gives them a chance to have another birth. So that's the time when Shiva, he gives the chance to have a birth for those gods in those couples who have sex at that time. So Diti, she was, after the act, she felt pity, and she approached the husband, and she was like asking for forgiveness, and then she didn't want the Shiva's anger to fall on her children. So basically she wanted her children to be protected, so she didn't go immediately for abortion. Like, okay, it didn't happen the way it should be, let's go for abortion. No. She asked the husband to pray to Shiva not to get angry, because Shiva can be very easily angered, but can also be very easily pleased. So she was asking him to please Shiva, because Kashyapa was a devotee of Shiva. So she did four mistakes in that union. Do you know what mistakes they did? Why was it inauspicious? So the first, I already told you, it was the wrong time. So time for a conception is very important. So to count the proper time, you can use app, which is called Muhurta. So if you don't have these apps, you can already install it today, Vaishnava calendar. So by this calendar you can count the proper days. And with the Muhurta app, you can count the proper time. So normally the proper time falls from at this season, this time 10:30 till 12 p.m. So after the sunset. So you know what mistakes they did in that union? I already told you about the two. Improper time, improper consciousness. And the other two? It's mentioned, I mentioned it.
No planning.
Huh?
No planning.
No what?
Planning.
No planning, yeah, exactly. And the fourth one? The fourth one was aversion to to the demigods, devatas. So third one, negligence of duties, because Ditishi disturbed the husband. He didn't finish his prayers. He didn't finish his meditation. So basically he didn't perform his religious duties to have a proper child. And Diti, the wife, she was apathetic to the demigods. So basically you can see there are so many mistakes you can do if you don't plan it, if you just do it. Not even aiming to have a child, that's the worst thing. Like my mother told me, the village she grew up, there were barracks. No barracks, where the soldiers stayed. It was during the communist regime. So many ladies, they would go to the soldiers at night, and they would have sex on the cemetery. Cemetery. So from these unions, then many like disabled, physical and mentally disabled children got born. Many, many. So you can see this is very inauspicious. It's not in the marriage, it's not planned, it's in the wrong time and place on the cemetery. Like, what do you expect? Some ghosts being born in your family. And that's what basically happens. If there is a child in unmarried relationship, normally ghost is being born. Even though you plan it or you do the samskaras and everything, can be like very pious ghost, because even in the temples we have like some pious ghosts visiting. Those who ever stayed in the ashram, they might have the experience. They're called the Brahma Rakshas. Like they're pious ghosts. Many of them used to be priests before. Then something happened, they commit suicide or something inauspicious. They did something very bad and they remained in a ghost body. So basically they're called like Brahma Rakshas. Heard about Brahma Rakshas? Yeah. So they also stay in the temple. Sometimes they can visit you at the night time. They also chant mantras. So if you chant mantras to repel them, they also start to chant with you. So you're like a night kirtan in your dreams. So basically if there is a union of two people and they are not married and they have a child, mostly would be a ghost or some kind of spirit. We have so many type of spirits. We have the Rakshasas, Pishachas, we have like hot goblins, we have many different type of ghostly beings. They live around us, we don't see them, like Yakshas, they stay in the corners of the room. We don't see them, but they are there. So they can enter your family by this inauspicious type of union, not in the marriage. That's why the marriage is important. Okay, so the preparation should be... Yes?
For the Muhurta, is the a name of the Muhurta? You mentioned the time and the sun.
Yeah, there are certain Muhurtas that with the proper name and time. Like you have the Amrit, which is the best. Shubha. Shubha also means good, but Amrit is like nectar, it's the best one. So basically you can do it in these two times, but we have to consider the sunset, when the sunset is finished. So Shubha you have from 9 to 10:30. And then you have the Amrit. From 10:30 till 12 p.m. Question?
It was actually about the unmarried relationship, ghost or spirit. If they conceive and are not married, but then get married, that's too late because the spirit is the soul that is that.
It's late, but better late than never. But still it's a ghost. It can be like a very pious ghost. Mm-hmm. Yeah, like these are like children. It's difficult to satisfy them. And many millennials are like that. You know the millennials born after 2000? Because nowadays it's not very much popular to be married. So basically couples, they remain unmarried and they have a child. But if they're committed to the relationship and in the future they plan to get married, it can be like more type of pious ghost. Still a ghost. You know. Yes, question?
Yes, what about the La Muhurta? That's an auspicious one.
Which one?
La, L-A-V-H.
Yeah. So, the La Muhurta, that one is good for to start education. Acquire some new good skills. So it is also good, but it's not the best for procreation because it's still during the day. So you try to do it after the day is finished, because according to Ayurveda, to have a sex during the day, especially for men, means he has to lose a lot of energy. So for him, losing semen during the day means it's a great loss of energy.
and then that shortens the life as well. So you try to avoid morning or daytime and sunset, and then you basically do it after the sunset and the nighttime. So you can see from the time you have like 1.5 hours, which is a good time. And it is very important, according to the Kama Shastras, like Srila Prabhupada, he explains in Srimad Bhagavatam that these Kama Shastras, like Kama Sutra, they are meant for Grihasthas to have a good progeny. So it's important also, according to Ayurveda, for the woman to have satisfaction during the union.
It's a good thing. You meant 12 a.m. there, right? 10:30 p.m. to 12 a.m.
Yeah, I think it's a.m., yeah. It's 10:30 p.m., 12 a.m., yeah. So, thank you.
Nice.
Because we use different time in Europe, yeah. You know. Your people in England want to be special, everything is different.
Just trying to make sure.
Yeah. Yes, question there?
What about Brahma Muhurta time? Is that a good question?
No. Like, you mean before Mahagarti, you do it and then you go to the temple.
Because with 1 minute I read.
But then you have to be quick, because, you know.
No, one of the books that I read is written by a devotee in Mumbai. She goes, one of the best time is Brahma Muhurta, but obviously not many people can get up at that time or whatever. So.
Well, I wouldn't recommend it during Brahma Muhurta, because again, it makes you very weak. You know, and Brahma Muhurta is the time for religious worship, for arati, mangal arati. It's not the time, it's not the best time for sex, you know. Of course, it's better than during the day, or during the sunrise or sunset, but still it will make you weak, physically. So these two, Shubha and Amrit Muhurta, they are the most auspicious times for the procreation during the day.
You said one is better than the other, or?
Yeah, Amrit is the best. It's like a nectar. Shubha is also good.
What is the difference? Is it just the fertility, or is it the, like, what is the distinction?
It's the constellation of the planets and the moon, because it's the moon who is in charge of the male and female fertility. Like, if you look at the woman's cycle, it's based on the movement of the moon, isn't it? That's like in my language, there is a word for menstruation, it's called the moons. So it's based on the movement of the moon. If the moon is waxing or waning, so that's considered like also. So that time Amrit is better, and the influence of the moon. It's based on the influence of the moon. Because the moon, he was cursed and he's losing his fertility from the full moon to the new moon. So better you do it from new moon after full moon, because that's the time when the moon is gaining its fertility, not losing it. This is becoming more and more complicated, you know. Well, we have to go on for the preparation. Do you have any more questions regarding the time? Yes?
I have a question about the marriage. They should be married. Does any type of wedding count as the right?
Does any?
Any type of, like, married, they can be married like Christian way, they can be married in a civil way, it counts.
Yes, I said there are 8 types of marriages. I don't want to go more into that because it's a big topic. But there should be some kind of marriage. At least if they don't have like a marriage with a priest, they can do like marriage on their own, like exchanging the garlands. Because that's the time when they're really married, when they exchange the garlands and they commit one to another. Like even in that ceremony, the time when they exchange the garlands, that's the time when they're like officially married. Yeah, so let's say at least you can do that, or you can say yes. Or some basic marriage should be there, like in Las Vegas. The night you can get married, and in the morning you can get divorced. It's very quick. Yes?
So legal marriage, it's not actual marriage. If you don't do it, it's like a Vedic ceremony or any type of, like in church or in Islamic way. So when is the actual like marriage taught?
It's the time when they officially, in front of some, some people or the sacrificial fire in front of God in some church or temple, mosque, when they officially commit to one another. That's like the time when they are get married. But so as you know, in Kali Yuga, it's like the marriage is based on just on some promise.
Like legal ones, we just sign it, so it's not like actual marriage?
It is marriage, of course. It is marriage because it's in front of other people and there is the commitment. Some questions?
Sorry. You know those two times you've given there? Is that for spring and winter? Are those the right times?
It can change, so you have to check according to the astrology. Because we are changing the times from summer to winter, and it's like you can really get confused if you want to be. So we have to consider. That's why we have some astrologer who does the job for you, if you really want to go into details. If you follow what I said, it should be proper. So preparation, it's called Garbhodan Samskar. This is a preparation.
It is important to have the preparation that brings a good result, having good and healthy progeny. Garbhodana Samskar means basically impregnating the woman. And Prabhupada, he gave like a standard for devotees to chant 50 rounds of Maha Mantra on Japa that day. That's like the most basic. If you are not into Brahminical stuff, doing all the rituals, then the most basic thing is simply that's what you do all day. You don't go to work. You don't do any other activity, you just chant 50 rounds, you study Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita, religious scriptures. You can also give charity the day to Brahmins, you can feed the cows, you can do a basic like some auspicious activities of the day, but not like a physical exercise, physical work. So that Nisheka at the time of conception, it's based on a preparation called the Garbhodan Samskar. And if you want to know more about that, it's described in the Kshatriya Saradipika. There are special mantras. If you want to have a male child, a boy, especially on the first pregnancy, it's the best ideal to have a boy, a male child for that. We have the Pumsavana, 9 mantras to be chanted to have a boy. That's described, you can read about it. So if you do it like that, if you do it according to Garbhodan Samskar, you can get a very pious soul to appear in your family. We have many examples in the scriptures, like we have the example of Kardama Muni and Devahuti. Yes?
I was wondering what makes it, because you mentioned if we do it as a Garbhodan Samskara, then you can invite an auspicious child. But what makes it a Garbhodan Samskara as opposed to... What makes it qualify as a Garbhodan Samskara? Is it the chanting of the mantra?
It is the consciousness. So the best for consciousness is to chant the Maha Mantra, because Maha Mantra is the most powerful of all mantras. And it's described in the Kalisantarana Upanishad scripture that chanting this mantra is recommended for this age of Kali as the best and easiest way of self-realization. So if you can't do all the Agnihotras around the Garbhodham and all the chant, all the different mantras, because they are like Purusha Sukta, Svasti Vachana, different type of Vedic mantras, you can chant that day as a preparation of your consciousness. Basically, you can just chant the Maha Mantra and you pray to Krishna to send a good child, good devotee into your family. So it is a prayer, and then you're using that formula for success. You're depending on Krishna, on God, to send a good child into your family. Because it's a blessing to have a good child. It is described in Vedas that two types of energies, they come out from the genital. The first one is called Mutra, and the other one is called Putra. You heard these two words before? Never. Mutra and Putra. So Mutra means basically urine. And Putra means progeny. Putra means progeny. It's a child who delivers the whole family, the parents, from the hellish condition or the hellish planet called Pu. So basically it's like very spiritual person. And if the child is not like Putra, then he's considered like a Mutra, like a urine. Yeah, it's like that, you know. It's not my idea, it's in the Vedas. So if your child is not like spiritual or religious, it's like considered like a urine, like useless, you know. And that's what happens today, you know. We have a lot of useless people in the society just creating havoc, creating pollution, creating a downfall of morality. So basically, it's useless, progeny, Mutra. So you go for Putra. That should be your goal, performing Garbhodham. So you pray to Krishna to have a good progeny. You don't want a ghost, you don't want a rakshas. You want to have like some sadhu appearing in your family. So from that example of Kardama and Devahuti, because they did everything properly, they considered like the best married couple in the universe. They got a child which was like God, Kapiladev. Was actually God appearing in their family as a child. Isn't it beautiful? Then you're considered like saint, like in Christian tradition, like Mother Mary, you know. So that's what it means to have a proper consciousness. Then the result would be to have a good child, which is like Putra, delivers the family from the hell. Not just the one generation, but it describes 11 generations before and after get delivered from hellish conditions of life. If the child is saintly, there was a question here.
So, is this the reason in relation to the Putra point about having a son first? Is it connected, or is it?
Yeah, it's also because of the tradition. The firstborn child or son is like he inherits property of the family after the father dies, and then he becomes like the head of the family. So that's the reason, continuing the dynasty. You know, the great kings, the Maharajas, they're always trying first for the male child to be like the next king, the firstborn child. So like in Mahabharata, you have the example of Karna. He's like very unfortunate person, because he was also born from inauspicious union of Kunti and Suryadev. So from Kunti, she got a mantra, she could call any demigod. So basically she just wanted to try the mantra. So she called Suryadev. And then Suryadev, he understood what happened, but then out of respect, losing respect among the other demigods, he couldn't just leave her. So he had to impregnate her. And she was a virgin, and she was scared, now I'm a virgin, I'm not married. I get pregnant, what will happen to me? like I don't be criticized, I might go to exile. So she was also afraid of losing respect. So that was the problem of Karna. Even though he was a firstborn child of Kunti, he was supposed to be the next emperor of the whole, not just of Hastinapur, but the whole earth, like emperor of the whole earth empire, the Vedic empire. But he was unwanted child. So Kunti, she had to hide that she was pregnant, and then she just had to let him go. And because of the wrong mentality of the parents, the Karna, from the beginning of his life, he got a problem with respect. And if you read the Mahabharata, it's always some problem not having respect about Karna. Even though he was supposed to be the emperor, not Yudhishthir. But if he was born the proper way, he could be the emperor. So this is how it works. You have to be careful what you do, because it has consequences. Yeah, we can also see from the Vedic literatures the example of the motherhood of these great personalities like Uttara. She got a child, Parikshit, Maharaj Parikshit, which was like a Brahma Rishi, which means very like religious king, great ruler. And still when Parikshit was in the womb of his mother Uttara, then the Pandavas there attacked by the Brahmastra. The Brahmastra was meant to destroy the descendant of the Pandava dynasty, so he was meant to kill Parikshit, but Parikshit, he was praying in the womb for protection to Krishna. So Krishna protected him from the atomic weapon, from Brahmastra. And Uttara, she was praying actually, there's beautiful prayers in the first canto of Bhagavatam that she was praying to Krishna, let the Brahmastra kill me, but she was praying to Krishna, please protect my child, please save my child. It's wonderful, because today, since 1980s, worldwide, now hear correctly, there's 1 billion and over 500 million abortions. It's over like 50 years. 1 billion 500 million abortions, induced abortions. It's every second one abortion somewhere on this planet, every day. And it's happening right now. You can see Uttara, she was offering her own life for the life of the child. That's the real like motherhood. Like in the Mahabharata, you have that 100 questions. One question is, what is heavier than earth? And the answer is the mother's love. So this is the real mother's love, that mother will sacrifice her own life for the child, not to sacrifice the child's life by abortion for own's benefit. So that's wrong, that's Kali Yuga. So there are special mantras described in Garbhodan Samskar ritual, and that purifies also the consciousness of the husband and also the body of the wife. Especially the womb of the wife, it gets purified. That's what it's meant for. You have some other question regarding Garbhodan? Yes?
So if you follow the samskaras, when the soul comes into this world, the baby, can you not share like the date of when they're born or pictures until a certain date? Is that said somewhere? Or?
Again, what, I don't understand the question.
So say like a lady gives birth to a baby.
Yeah.
Is there a set period where you're not meant to tell people when your child has been born or to share pictures with others? Because I've heard of.
Well, that's some just a folklore, you know. We'll talk about later about the first like 3 months that the mother spends with the newborn child at home. She doesn't go out. She's not supposed to go outside of the house. And that hiding was there because of the Muslim invasions in India. There was a genocide
So it became like a folklore that the child was born but it was hidden. So they wouldn't raid the house and kill the child, you know. Something else regarding Garbhodan?
You mentioned about the Mahamantras. Where can we find those Mahamantras?
Yeah, it's described in the Kalisantara Upanishad.
Okay.
16 words.
Okay, can you please write that?
It's the Mahamantra, you have it on almost every leaflet here. This is the Mahamantra. But it's described in the scripture called Kalisantara Upanishad. So Upanishad basically means you have to sit close to Guru to learn the philosophy of the Vedas. That's the tradition. You learn it from Guru. It's not like, it's not by speculation, by concoction. Because this concoction is like one of the manovrittis, it's one of the functions of the mind. The mind just concocts things as it likes. Because the mind tends to like and dislike. Yeah, I don't like God, so I created a theory of evolution, the story of Darwin. It's a mental concoction. It's the evolution is of consciousness, but the species, they don't evolve. The lower species don't, like the higher species don't evolve from the lower species, but it works in the nature of the opposite way. From the higher species, we get the lower species, and the species in the nature, they tend to adjust to the environment, but that's not evolution. Like if you come to England and you buy a new like raincoat, it's not evolution, it's just you adjust to the weather, you know. But the mind is so creative, let's say, by the influence of Rajaguna, it tends to create some concoctions. So that's why I have a guru. The guru, he teaches us the philosophy as it is without any change. So we have the Garbhodan. So if the Garbhodan is successful, it will manifest on the lady. There are certain symptoms that are described in the Ayurveda. It's called Garbhini Paricharya. It's the antenatal care. So how do you recognize the lady is pregnant? Well, she feels uneasy in the morning and vomits without any reason, right? It's like one of the first symptoms. Then also her appetite will increase. She might develop like a black color on breasts. There are certain symptoms by which you can tell the lady is pregnant. Fortunately, we have like pregnancy tests you can buy in the pharmacy. So there is a certain lifestyle that the pregnant lady should follow. So that's called Garbhini Paricharya. So the Arabic scriptures, they describe that the lady shouldn't go in a secluded place, like going to abandoned house, cemetery, crematorium, like a deep forest, dark parks. She should avoid going to these places.
Did they say something also about like a well or something like that?
Yeah, abandoned well, because there are certain type of bhutas, ghosts, they reside there, especially the vampires, the rakshasas. You heard about vampires, right? Well, some may say it's mythology from the Middle Ages, but the Vedas, they describe them as rakshasas, and they have their own continent, the Sri Lanka. And so the vampires, they get very strong at the night. It takes 10,000 people to kill one rakshasa, so they're very strong.
they suck the blood, that's like their food. They suck the blood out, and they can take any form, so you can meet them on the streets of London with a nice three-piece suit, and they might be just coming from the blood bank, from their lunch. And you think, oh, this is a nice gentleman, nicely dressed, you know, some successful person. And he might be just coming from his lunch in the blood bank, you know. So the Rakshasas, they have it easier in this age because they don't have to kill all the time to get the blood. So they basically, that's why they establish the blood banks where you donate the blood. You get paid for it sometimes. Sometimes people just do it for free out of goodwill. And the Rakshasas, they can drink that, they can choose which year, male or female, like that. They will. I can imagine they're like a party, you know, like people when they drink wine, they say like, oh, it was a good year, you know. They smell it, a good smell, you know, they say, oh, this is from the east side of the Alps, you know. So like that, the Rakshasas, they can also have a party with the blood. So these stories, they are not just some mythology, it's real. It's reality. These type of beings, they reside in abandoned houses, abandoned well, deep forest, crematory, cemetery, crematorium, like that. So the lady shouldn't go there because they tend to like very fine blood of the fetus. So they can cause this abortion. That's what they do. They suck the blood of the fetus and they cause abortion.
Is this the reason why they also say not to go to Shiva temple during pregnancy?
Yeah, because...
The question.
Yes?
We couldn't hear the comment. Could you repeat it?
Yeah, she was asking that. That's why also it's not prescribed to go to Shiva temple during pregnancy, because Shiva is the Bhutanath, so many gods and spirits, they reside in Shiva's temples. So the lady, she might just be possessed by these beings and they might suck the blood or the fetus. So the fetus blood is very refined, very tasty, it's very fresh. It's like a raw, like today we have. The raw diet is very popular. So it's very raw, it's very refined, very fresh. So that's what they like, so it's better for the ladies to avoid these places. Also, it's advised not to sleep during the day. Not to rest without washing feet, mouth and hands, because also you get possessed if you don't wash your feet after food or after toilet. Plastic shoes, they don't prevent you from not getting dirty feet. You have to wash your feet. Like in big temples in India, before you enter, you have like a washing place for feet. Or it's normal in India, you go to toilet, you go to bathroom, and then after you wash your feet, there's like a place for washing feet. So there is a reason for that. One of the reasons is also not to get influenced by Kali Yuga and also by ghosts and spirits. There's another story in the Bhagavatam, I don't remember exactly the name. There was a pregnant lady and she didn't wash her feet after eating, so she took 100 steps, because according to Ayurveda, after lunch you should take 100 steps and lay down on your left side for one muhurta, 48 minutes. So she did that, but she forgot to wash her feet and mouth and hands, and immediately Indra came and he tried to destroy the fetus, cut it into like, I don't know, 47 pieces. That's the time when the Marutas were born. You know the story? Yeah, it doesn't matter. So the thing is to keep yourself clean and not to exercise. It's also not good. Not to do very heavy work. Not to eat too much or too little. Just enough. So when the lady is pregnant, then there is a special fire that burns in her body. So obviously she can digest more, so she can eat more. But she shouldn't overeat. Yes, question?
So you mentioned not to exercise, yoga during pregnancy is very popular. Does that count as exercise? Is that okay?
That yoga is fine, but I mean like going to gym and doing like heavy weights and, you know, like, you know,
could also to clarify the type of yoga, because there's Ashtanga yoga.
Is it like a gravity yoga?
Or Ashtanga yoga, like you can do Hatha yoga, which is like Hatha yoga, just breathing, but Ashtanga yoga is more strenuous, so...
Yeah, obviously you will not do like the reverse asanas. Like doing a headstand or shoulder stand is not recommended during pregnancy. Also, it's not recommended to take laxatives, like Trifala, or any different type of detoxifying medicine. If the pregnant lady, if she has a constipation, she might get a tendency for constipation, then she can take boiled milk with ghee. That will help to clear the bowels, to clean the bowel movement. But she shouldn't take Trifala or any other like laxative drugs or bitter drugs, because they might cause abortion. There was a question.
What about things like swimming?
Swimming.
During pregnancy.
If you have a swimming pool at your yard, you can just not swim, just relax. So basically the lady should be more like in a relaxed mood, you know. Just taking it easy. But it's also important that the lady shouldn't get hurt or shouldn't get diseased. Because if she gets diseased during the pregnancy, it may affect the health of the child. Like, if she gets some problem, for example, with eyes, then the baby may also have problems with the eyes. So like that, she should also avoid taking intoxicants. That's also not recommended. There's a special medicine that is prescribed to be taken during pregnancy to protect the child and the mother from disease and have a safe delivery, which is called Garbharakshan. Garbharakshan medicine is, for example, Mahadhanvantaram. Gulika. So she can take this medicine to protect the child, and Asafoetida or Ashtachurna, which contains Asafoetida, is also very much recommended for good digestion. Ashtachurnam or Hingvashtak is the same, just different name. Specifically, it's Asafoetida Hing. As one of my students in Ayurveda, she was pregnant second time. First pregnancy was a natural abortion, because she was sick. And the second pregnancy also was problematic, and the doctors, they wanted to induce the abortion, because they told her that it's unsafe. She got some thrombosis. So I advised her to follow all this what I'm talking about, take the medicine. And after 1 week she was cured, and then she got a very strong and stout boy, a child, very strong child. You know, so you can see this is the power of Ayurveda, what it can do. It can save child in the womb. So the food shouldn't be too spicy, too salty or too sour, too bitter, too pungent or too astringent. So it should be balanced food, like wholesome food, sattvic food. Yes?
What about Chyawan Prash? You know it already.
Yeah, Chyawan Prash, if it's mild by taste, then it's good.
Is it good for pregnant?
Yeah, but not too much, just a little bit. But the best one during pregnancy is this Madhvantaram Gulikam. So, after a few months, when the child is developed, then if it kicks first on the right side, if the breast, the right breast is bigger than the left, then it's a male child. If it kicks first on the left side, and the left breast is bigger, then it's the female child. There are so many symptoms that we can recognize also. The gender is also the nadi pariksham, the pulse diagnosis by which you can tell whether it's male or female. You can also adjust the gender, because the gender is developed within the first 3 months. So you can adjust it by genetic modification. There's a special technique for that in Ayurveda. It's basically sniffing herbal ghee. So if you want to have a male child, the first 3 months, you take that ashwagandha herb, which I talked about before, which strengthens the male energy. And the lady, she can sniff ashwagandha gritam, which is ghee induced by the power of ashwagandha. For 3 months, she can sniff it. And if she wants a female child, then she can sniff this shatavari gritam, which means clarified butter infused with the power of shatavari. There are also some scars to protect the child, like many rituals like Shimantonayana, which is like parting of the hair, which is done in 4th, 6th or 8th month of pregnancy. It's interesting because Bhagavatam describes the 6th and 7th month of the pregnancy, the child becomes conscious. So the soul is awakened, it's in Brahma Bhuta state, where when it is conscious, it can hear, can talk even sometimes. But the soul prays to Krishna, to God, for protection from Maya. But when the child is born, there's so much pressure during the delivery that the soul is put into deep illusion again. So it starts like an animal, with the consciousness of an animal, like Anamaya. Yes?
Two questions about this.
Please, lawyers, okay.
I had two questions regarding that. So one was, I heard somewhere that not all souls pray in the womb.
Not all souls pray?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's true. Most of the pious souls, they pray. The impious souls, they tend to forget Krishna. Their desire is to forget Krishna, so they're like Bahirmukhi. They turn their back to Krishna. So they fall into deep illusion, the Mahamaya.
And the second question was, you know how we hear that we can teach the child so many things in the womb?
Yeah, so you start doing that the 6th and 7th of month. You can play like the lectures, you know, with the headphones. And also by your example, like family example, you don't argue with your husband, you know, you don't do mean acts, sinful activities like that, you don't watch movies or cinema. And it's interesting because in Ayurveda it's described that woman, she tends to have like a strong desires during pregnancy, and the man, he should fulfill those desires. But they should avoid like the sexual acts. But like, for example, if the lady, if she wants to see the queen or the king, it means the child born will be a great king. Or if she wants to go to some class, to the temple, to see some big devotee, some pure devotee, sadhu, then the child would also become like a sadhu. And that's also interesting about Hiranyakashipu, because once he heard two birds singing Om Namo Narayana, and he couldn't get that mantra out of his mind. So Hiranyakashipu got many wives, because polygamy is allowed in Vedic culture, so constantly his mind was chanting Om Namo Narayana, Om Namo Narayana, and then he was with his wife, having a union, and then Prahlad Maharaj was born, great devotee in the family of a great demon. It's very interesting how strong the mantra can be, and how strong influence on the consciousness it has. There's another story about Ashtavarga, or Ashtavakra. He was in the womb of his mother, and the mother, she was attending the Sanskrit class of the father, and the father, he was explaining the Sanskrit grammar, but he made some mistake. And the child, his son, he corrected him from the womb of the mother. Can you imagine, you have such a child? And then the father, he cursed him, you know, he cursed him to be born with some 8 defects on his body. That's why it was called Ashtavakra. But then later it got corrected, so kind of worked out for him. But I've seen it. I know one couple in Mayapur. They never were in a relationship before. They're like both Gurukulis, the second generation devotees, born in devotees' family. So they got prearranged marriage. They're like suitable for each other. And the first time they got they did the Garbhodan, they got a very pious child. And he's like, it's just amazing child, you know, boy. He's like, when he was like 3-4 years old, my Guru Maharaj, he took him for the Bhagavatam class, and he was just basically giving class with him, and he liked it so much, and when he came home, he wanted to give class every day, you know. So his mother, she had to purchase a microphone for him, so he could give a class, you know, at home. So he just started to give Bhagavatam classes, but she didn't put it on. He didn't care if it's on or off. He required the microphone because he saw it. His guru got the microphone, you know, and like he would only sleep when the class of his guru was going on. If the class stopped, he started to cry. It's like you can see this is the power of the spiritual practice, you know, the mercy of Krishna can get a very pious child. When he was like 5 years old, he was already winning the mantra competitions. 5 years old, he was reciting mantras one after another, like winning competitions. So this is the power of doing it properly. So just before the delivery, this Choshanti Homa to be performed, a special sacrifice, yes?
You mentioned that during the process of the birth, the child forgets everything because of the traumatic process of birth. But then you also mentioned that we can teach the child things whilst it's in the womb. So
yeah, we'll come to that. We'll come to that.
Yeah, I'm just wondering why the child doesn't forget the things that you taught him whilst in the womb.
Sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't, you know, it depends. It's many times like past, like Prabhupada, you know. Like his first memories are being in the cart. When you take the baby, you put it in a cart. Being like few months old, his parents, they took him to the temple, and he's remembering praying to the deities. You know, when he was just few months, his body was just few months old, you know, he's already like praying in the temple for the deity, so it's like pastimes. But for a great devotees, you know, like it's like obvious they forget that they remember. But for us, you know, it's like what can we do? We can chant Hare Krishna. It's meant for us to revive the spiritual consciousness. So then when the child is born, there's the Jat Karma, the birth ceremony. So the father, he does a special yagya, then he grinds barley and wheat
and mixes it with the ghee. And he tells the mantra, don't cut the umbilical cord yet. And then he feeds the child with that ghee on a golden spoon. That's why there is a saying, being born with the golden spoon in the mouth. It's from this jat karma. So that helps the baby to develop like a higher intelligence. And then he says, he tells the mantra, that now you can cut the umbilical cord. So the umbilical cord should stay at least 15 minutes so that the best blood, which is like super blood, which is meant for the baby, will enter the baby's body. Because if they immediately cut the cord, then the baby will miss that blood. And it's a special, how do you call it? I don't know the English name. Special word. How do you call that blood in the umbilical cord? Somebody knows?
Google it.
Huh?
Can Google it.
Yo. We don't have the time for that. Okay. Anyway, we go on. So, there's so many things that can be done. Then the first 1.5 months after delivery, it's called Sutika Paricharya. It's the postnatal care for the mother. So if the delivery was normal, then it's 1.5 months, or till the time of the next menstruation cycle, she has to also follow special postnatal care. Yes?
Is there any suggestion in the Vedas to how to have a normal delivery instead, like nowadays there's so much of cesarean?
Yeah, that's a very good question. Actually, normally if you do it properly, if you follow the proper season, the proper day and proper time, and you do the Garbhodhan, then also the delivery would be normal. And you can also do it at home if you have the special person to help you. You can also do it in water, which is also very auspicious to give birth in water. It's much easier for the mother. So if you follow the dharma means like the inherent nature based on the universal principles, that should be natural. That's why it was much easier for the ladies to have child before, because they were people living more natural lifestyle. Nowadays everything is upside down and it's more like artificial. So also the delivery has became very problematic. So if there is the cesarean cut, then the postnatal care is from 6 to 7 months after the delivery. So in that time she should be in warm weather, warm environment, having like wet vegetables, like juicy vegetables, fruits, and like unctuous foods, like fatty foods, for body to recover. So basically, the first 3 months, she shouldn't go anywhere with the child. The child and mother, they should be together. So when the child is born, and after they cut the umbilical cord, and they give the breast to suck, if the milk is proper. If the milk is not proper, if it's like colostrum, then for 5 days they have to wait and they have to feed the child with ghee and honey mixture. And after 5 days, after the colostrum disappears, after the normal milk will start to flow, they can start to feed the child with the mother's milk. Because the mother's milk is meant to be the best food for a human being. So the longer you can lactate the child, the better intelligence and brain it will have in the future. So the first 3 months you try to stay at home. So you'll need a high-speed internet. At least in Slovakia it's crazy, because the child is born after a few weeks, they already call you to doctor, to go to doctor, and they start with injections, you know, like in USA by the time the child is few months, it already go like 50 injections. And it's crazy because that autism went so much high by thousands of children per 10,000 born people. So it's really crazy. There is a link between the injection, the vaccination, and the autism. And I've seen few examples myself. Child being normal, then they went for injection, and then they become autistic. And it's the child is like possessed by a ghost. So I tried to do some spiritual rituals, and the child started to eat normally, because you don't eat normally, you know, just you let the child to sit by the table and it wouldn't eat. So what the family, what they had to do, just they put some foods around the house. So when the child runs around the house, just picks up some food and eats like that during the day. So I did some like mantras and stuff, mantra and tantra, and the child started to eat normally. But the mother, she thought I did some magic, some like black magic or whatever. She was like so much doubtful because she was going to like the best specialist in Slovakia for autism, and there was no help. And now after one session, the child started to eat normal, so she rejected more treatments like that. People, you know, they don't have faith. What to do, you know, it's karma, they have to go through it. So if you follow this Jat Karma and the Sutika Paricharya, that's very auspicious. Because the child shouldn't be expressed for the five elements. We have the ether, air, fire, water, and earth. Especially the sunlight, the fire has a strong influence on the skin. So if the skin is not developed properly, it can cause a trouble for the child's health. So try to avoid going outside for 3 months. Imagine you give birth and for 3 months you're at home with your family. Is it nice? What do you think?
I think it's good.
Sorry?
I think it's good.
You think it's good? Is there somebody who thinks it's not so good? Really? So you want to travel, you want to go visit your family in Russia and show the child.
There's still like a flat, like a four walls.
Yeah, in house or flat. And you invite your family to come to visit you, or you give birth in your like family's town, so you don't have to travel anywhere. So you basically stay with your family and they take care of you for 3 months. And after that, the first thing what you do, you go to visit a temple. That should be the third day of the third waxing moon after the birth. It's called Nishkramanam. First time outside for the child and the mother after the delivery.
Sorry, after how many days?
So basically it's like 3 months. Third day of the third waxing moon after birth.
Okay.
So then the name giving, Namakaran. So the name should be given also according to the astrological chart of the baby. So if you plan the parenthood, then you know also the time, place, and the date of procreation. So astrological chart is best counted by that. The problem today, not many people know when it happened because they didn't plan it. But that's the best details for counting the astrology. So the name is given 10 day, 12 day, or 101 day, or full year after the birth. Not immediately. Of course, you can plan the name. You know, you plan it in advance. But you give it like officially in the Namkaran Samskar. 10th, 12th, or 101st day or full year after from the birth. Then the husband, he can perform this Poshtika Karma Samskar every month, the first year after the delivery for good health. And for male, after the 6th, or the from 6th or 8th month after the delivery, the Annaprashan, the first grain
the first eating grain ceremony is performed. So that's also for a good digestion of the child. So the child should eat like the solid food for a male after 6 months, for a female after 5 months. So for male it's from 6th or 8th month after delivery, for female it's after 5th or 7th month. So that's also very auspicious. Then the first hair cutting, Chuda Karanam, that's in between the first and second year, the best. After 3 years is the second best, and after 5 years is the third best.
How does that benefit the child, the hair cutting? How does that benefit?
It benefits the development of the brain, because it's connected with the marmas, vital points in the head. So then educating the child. First you educate the child in hearing and speaking. This is one of the mistakes the parents do today. They begin with the alphabet very soon. It's the biggest mistake, you know, because you can also turn that child into autistic, being very like inside person, that he can't express himself, he can read and write, but he can't express himself. So first, what you teach him is expressing himself, hearing and speaking. And of course the child is born in the consciousness of anamoy, like animal. And to like, I think, first year, there's no difference between the chimpanzee child and the human child. So they're both like very similar in nature. But then in the human being, so that's the first thing what you teach, hearing and speaking. And only after the child can touch the ear like that, overhead, like this, because the children normally they can raise the hands only like this, but if the body is so developed that it can touch like that, that's a time when you can talk about, you can think about sending the child to nursery, to teachers for education. But it's not necessary for the child to know alphabet at that time. So they still have some time for that. So in terms of educating the child, the first 6 years, the Kaumara stage, the child should be treated like a king. You know how you treat a king? The king has many servants, they cook for him, they dress him, they bathe him. So basically the child is like your deity, and it's a 24/7 job. They say the most difficult job is the mother's job. That's why for women it's advised to be like housewives, so they can fully dedicate for this job, motherhood. It's the most difficult job. It's 24/7, 365 days per year, and yeah, it's a full-time job. So the first 6 years, the child should be treated like a king. You have some question for that?
Is that first 3 years or three?
First 6 years. So basically you teach it first hearing, speaking, and like the basic like human behavior, like going to the toilet, dressing up, and eating properly, like eating while sitting, because the children tend to run around. So you teach them to sit down and eat at one go, not, you know, here and there pieces. So it's like basic things of being like a human being, that trying to help to the child to develop like a human consciousness. So in that regard, the parting guidelines, they're called Pancha Kutumba Sadhana. Pancha Kutumba Sadhana. what is first and most important thing, what do you think, in parenthood? Any ideas? Yes?
Set a good example for the child?
Set the example, but that comes later. So you, for example, you imagine you have a child. So what is the most important thing with your child? Yes?
Give them love.
Huh? Give them love. Like give them love, yeah. You're very close. Establishing a very deep relationship. It's called Vatsalya Ras. That relationship is very important for the child to develop a strong physique and a stable mind. So that's called Dharmachara. There are many examples today. If the child is not nurtured with love from their parents, if the child doesn't have that strong relationship with the parents, then they become very unstable in their life, psychologically very unstable, and they tend to commit like many sinful acts, and their life can end up very in very unfortunate way. Like for example, lack of mother's love increases the tendency for drug addiction. So basically, people by drug addiction, they try to compensate their childhood trauma, not getting enough mother's love or their parents' love. Yes, Prabhu?
Just real quickly, going back to the thing about mortifying treatment like a king. So, as you said, the sixth year, and I know the Prabhupada says mortified. So does it mean from the time that they're born until they have their sixth birthday? And the other thing is, do you adjust that according to... I know some devotees who have children, and they were under the impression that if the child matures a bit faster, then it slightly changes, but is it always not to the age of six? Or is there an adjustment according to the maturity of the child?
Yeah, some children, like for Kumaras, they mature very fast, you know. And in Brahma, I told them, you know, to get married and stuff, but they took the vow not to ever get mature. So they remain like one of the oldest people in the universe, even though their body is like 6 years old for Kumaras. So they can mature very fast, of course. Then the father, if they mature that fast, like for Kumaras, he has no influence over their life anymore, you know.
And how do you know that the child's matured? Because how do you see that this child is a bit mature already?
Well, if he resides by heart Bhagavatam, you know, then you know that something is going on there, you know. If he knows Bhagavad Gita by heart by the time when he's like 3 or 4 years old, then you know it's a special child. And when he's like 7, 8 years old, he takes sannyas, you know, then you can't do anything. You can be like just happy, you know.
But generally, normal cases, like, is there anything that you look for?
In normal cases, you start hearing, speaking, then you go for reading, and then writing. You know, that's like the normal procedure of educating the child.
More specifically, how do you know if the child is maturing faster than average, so that you start giving them things before they hit six? That's what I'm trying to understand.
Yeah, as I said, if the child speaks in the womb, if it knows the Bhagavatam by heart or Bhagavad Gita, then you know it's like mature. Otherwise, you just follow this procedure. Even if you see it's more mature than the other kids, still you teach it to hear and to speak the mantras, you know. To hear and speak, just by repetition you teach them. You don't show them like books and teach them to read and write. No, you keep that for school, for teachers. But you teach them, you can recite and they can recite after you. It's like by repetition. And even if they are not that mature, they can actually speed their maturity by that process. So hearing and chanting is the most important devotional service. Shravanam Kirtanam, the most powerful one. Yes, Mataji?
Yes, so
you mentioned about treating a child as a prince for the first 6 years of life. At the same time, I've also understood that there's a stage called terrible twos.
There is what?
A stage called terrible twos. So when the child hits about 2 years of age, then they start to, in the parent's eyes, become quite disobedient. And so I know some devoted parents have struggled to combine treating child like a prince, but also trying to not let the child become quite wild. So what does one do in that instance?
In that instance, you have to teach them by play, by the game, you know. So for children, every activity is like a game. So if you want to teach them something, you teach it through a game. Like there was a great king, he got sons, and nobody could educate them. He was very unhappy because they're supposed to become the next kings. So these princes, they just nobody could train them. He tried everything, and then one Brahmin came, and this Brahmin, he developed like animal stories from animal and like animalistic nature, and he taught them these stories. He just telling the stories all the time, the stories about like animals called Panchatantra, and he made them into kings in six months. He made them into like educated princes in 6 months just by telling them stories from the animal kingdom. Have you read Panchatantra? There's many like moral instructions inside. It's hidden. It looks like a fairy tales. That's hidden moral instructions. So basically that's what you do. You teach the child by games. Like if you want the child to learn how to cook, you make the cooking a game, you know, like playing with the dough. You want them to learn how to be clean. So you do it by game, you don't do it by force, because I told you have to do it. And if they don't do it, then you increase the pressure. And that's the time when they tend to be rebellious. Because you teach them by pressure, because they have to do it because you said so. And basically you're exercising your Ishvara Bhav, that controlling desire, that I'm the controller and the enjoyer. So it doesn't work for children. There's an important aspect in education. It's called Sharan and Anusharan. So you teach them by game, and if they do some mistake consciously, if they do something really naughty, but they do intentionally, then you have to chastise them. So that's called charan. I know it's forbidden to chastise the child in England, but you have to chastise them in some way. Like Maria Shoda, she was, you know, trying to chastise Krishna with a stick. She was basically just like teasing him, but she genuinely wanted to chastise him, so he started to cry, and then he behaved himself. So that's the chastisement. But what is more important is Anusharan, to teach the child discipline. The discipline comes by showing the good example. So the parents, they should be like the best example for the child. That's why they're called the first gurus of the child. You have the Shiksha, Diksha Guru, and the... I forgot the... What is the first Guru name? Louder, please. Vartma Pradarshika Guru. Yeah, so the parents, the nature should be like Vartma Pradarshika Gurus for the child, but by showing example. And the children, they follow the example if it's natural. So that's saying that do as I say, but not as I do, doesn't work. You have to be the example naturally. Like, if you like go to the temple naturally, then the child will observe that and will take your mood and also will like to go to the temple. If you go to the temple just to show the child that you should go to the temple, but you don't like it, then the child will also be like that it will go to the temple only because you said so, but not because it likes. So the children, naturally, they take the mood of their parents, because their karma is so much connected. So it's good to be like the natural example, and by that natural example you show the discipline, and you teach the discipline to the child. Like when you wake up naturally in Mangal Arati, then the child will also wake up for Mangal Arati. And it's natural for babies to wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning. Sometimes like people, they complain to me, oh, you know, I don't have a good sleep. He wakes up at 4 o'clock in the morning, yeah, because it's Brahma Muhurta time. He wants to, you know, get up, he wants to do, you know, kirtan, bhajan, you know. Be engaged in the devotional service, it's natural, you know. But the parents, they complain, oh, I can't sleep, you know, afterwards, I got disturbed sleeping like that. So it's natural that the children, they want to follow their parents. So we have to teach them the discipline by a natural example. But the punishment should be also there. Because then you set what are the borders that the children, they know. If you set the example by the punishment, that this is the border they shouldn't cross. Yes?
So how does one do that? What form is the punishment? How does one
punish
do that with the punishment?
Well, you can you can use a stick, but you don't do like physical punishment. But you know.
So you show the stick.
You show the stick, and then the child would understand. And if he does really something really stupid, like setting fire on the house, then you have to use physical this stick, you know.
Like, and is that from a certain age?
Yeah. It's from the age when the child is not... its games are becoming more serious, you know, and the child is becoming more responsible. Like, I know in Slovakia, me and my friends, we used to... get physical punishment many times because we did many like naughty things, you know. We set the fire on the forest many times. We get punishment with a stick from father. And it's, you know, to save the life sometimes it's necessary. It's just like exemption, but the example of punishment should be there, you know, that like the teacher and the parent, they should show the roses, the love for the child, but also you can show the storm, the thunder. So two sides of guru, or two sides of a teacher, or two sides of a parent. The roses, the flowers, you know, that beautiful relationship based on love and service, and also the thunder. If you do really something bad, like you try to kill another child, and the punishment must be there, because the borders, they must be set. You know. Yes?
So if a child does something really bad and they're punished physically, how is that reconciled with non-violence? And
that's non-violence. Because if you don't do it, that's what happens in London, in the UK. There are many children walking around with knives, and the police, they try to confiscate these knives. They create like a huge statue just made of confiscated knives. And these gangs, sometimes they fight with each other and then stop people. And I heard it costs like £100 to get stopped, or to stop somebody, pay £100 and they just stop somebody. They don't know, you know, it's like that. It's like a mafia. When I was doing Sankirtan around the UK, sometimes I met these people, there was so much evil coming from their eyes, because they have no borders from the parents, from the teachers, and it's just a havoc for the society. Like a few years ago, there was almost a public war. I don't know, the Brent Cross, or what was it? You remember? Like people getting robbed, stopped. Like police couldn't do anything about it. That's most of the young people. So if there is no punishment, there are no borders, and then everything is allowed. And there is no concept of authority for the child. Yes?
So, I mean, on that point, because my understanding is, at least in the UK, like to actually, is it physically hitting the child is also considered to be against the law or something. So I think there's also that.
So
sense
that's wrong.
That,
yeah. It's against the dharma.
Yeah.
Of parenthood.
Like the actual legal law. So I guess that's also something to.
Of course, it should be abuse, because they call it a child abuse. But if it's serious, if the child tries to stop, you know, cut somebody or burn house of somebody or car, then, you know, punishment must be there. It's like, life can be serious, material life can be very serious. But the best thing is to teach the child the discipline by showing the good example. So you know that saying, do as I say, not as I do? Yeah, that doesn't work. If you want the child to do something, you have to do it also, not just say it. And you should do it naturally, because the woman and the children, they tend to get the mood immediately of the man or the parents or the father. So then we have, and the next principle of the parenthood is encouraging the spiritual growth of the child. It's called Dharma Svagriha. Like you have a temple at your house, altar, and then you do arti, puja. You teach the child to do puja. Like Prabhupada's father, he taught him how to do puja. He got him deities of Radha Krishna. So that's called Dharma Svagriha.
I had a question.
Yes.
The point before, in terms of the, like, you mentioned about the child naturally waking up at like Mangalarti. So, what is the guidance on sleep for children? And
you have to give them milk with saffron, nutmeg, or ashwagandha to put them to sleep and early. You have to put them to sleep very early, like 7, 8 o'clock. I remember that my mother, they would put us to sleep before the sun set. Like other children, they are still playing on the streets. And I could hear them, I feel like very sad, I can't play. And we were already on the bed, you know, 7, 8 o'clock. And the sun was still up. So you have to put the child to sleep early. So for that, if you boil saffron with milk, that's very good, like a sleeping agent. You use like a pinch of saffron or ashwagandha. It's not narcotic in it, but it's like a natural sedative for the brain and for good development as well. So milk is very important also for Sutika, the mother, after delivery, and for the child as well. So the child first should drink like mother's milk, and if the mother doesn't give milk, then should drink cow's milk, or should be boiled, best to boil it with some spices. Like saffron, a little bit of nutmeg, not too much, because if you eat too much, it can be like a drug. And but ashwagandha is safe. Ashwagandha you can use, it's not addictive, and it also helps with the proper development. So you teach the child, that's the third principle, dharma, sambhasan. Sambhasan, it means the healthy eating and healthy playing, like playing in the nature. You know, eating healthy food, you don't give sweets, chocolate to the child. You know, you teach them how to eat like the natural sweets, not what you buy outside, but what you make in your house as prasadam, what is offered. There was like somebody did a photography of different cultures of their world, what they eat in 1 month as a family. And it was amazing because like the cheapest food and the most natural food people got in Bhutan. And basically there was nothing preserved. Everything was just natural fruits and vegetables and grains and legumes. In Africa also, in India it was quite like wholesome, but in America almost everything was just packed. It was like this sugared water, like Coca-Cola, there's so many bottles of Coca-Cola, chips, everything was just packed, like preserved food, like super unnatural and super unhealthy. And this is what they eat with their family, like children, it's terrible, you know. And there is a very high rate of cancer, diabetes, and heart disease. Heart disease, heart ischemia is like the topmost disease number one of the humanity at present, day, present moment on this planet. It's also the most common cause of death of the humanity. So it's basically from that food, you know. So teach them how to eat healthy. And also by your own example, not that you hide yourself in your chocolate and then you, the child will find out, the child will like lose faith in you. So basically you can make like good halva, you know, like organic semolina, organic butter, organic sugar. And then you cook it nicely, you know, and then you offer it and then you eat it with the child. It's like, it's a relationship. Giving gifts, accepting gifts, offering food, eating food, or revealing one's mind. And listening to the revelation of somebody else's mind. So these are like six types of loving exchanges. So that's what you do with your child. You teach them also by your own example how to eat properly, like healthy, and also how to play in natural way. Not that you buy them all this plastic type of toys, but you use like the best if you can promote their creativity, if they can create their own toys, or you buy them some like wooden toys. It's amazing, like in Africa, people, especially the children, they don't have these toys, but they can make their own like dolls, you know, from straw. Even the rich people, families, that's what their children do. They just play in the nature and they make these like natural dolls, and it's very beautiful. It's how Krishna plays in the spiritual world. That concept comes from that friendship relationship with Krishna, the gopas playing with Krishna in the nature in Vrindavan, the forest of Vrindavan. You have the 12 forests of Vrindavan. So Krishna plays there with his gopas and they also eat like very natural, very healthy food, what Mother Yashoda cooks or what the other gopis cook. They bring it all and they have like lunch together on these lotus leaves or the banana leaves. It's very beautiful. So this is what you should also teach your child, not to play the computer games, you know, and drink Coca-Cola and eating chocolate and going to McDonald's. It's amazing. The other day I was having a lunch in one like a shopping mall, like getting the Ayurvedic, the thali, you know, the Indian food. And the family next to me, they're also having like some Indian thali, but the child was having French fries. I was like surprised, you know, like, oh my God, this child doesn't even know what's going on. He's already eating French fries from McDonald's. And the parents like happily, you know, about it. They don't complain. This is what comes by example. So the child knows what is McDonald's from the parents. Because the parents, they took the child to McDonald's and they give him a French fries. So they taught him how to eat it. Of course the child would like it because it's like, it's fried, you know. Fried food is very tasty, but it's not very healthy. This is the problem about the fried food. That's why fried food, Ayurveda advises to eat only once a week. So the child will eat what you teach it to eat. If you give it chocolate, of course it will like chocolate, sweet, you know, it's nice. It's like some milk powder is there, so that some sattva, some goodness is there, so the child will like it. But if you teach it to eat just some dates, and the child doesn't know some chocolate even exists, it will not like it. It will not cry if you go to the shop with the child. Oh, mommy, I want chocolate. No, no, you can't have chocolate. No, I won't start to cry. It's like a whole scene going on. But it was you first who taught the child to eat chocolate, so now you can't be surprised. Because the children, they like to eat sweets. So better to teach them to eat like dried fruits or like fresh fruits. As sweets, to get that sweet taste, because sweet taste is madhurya. It's important for the development of the child, the body. It's anabolic. It's required for energy, because the child has a lot of energy use, so it requires a lot of energy. So that's what you get in the like the carbohydrates. So you can teach that to the child. So that's healthy eating, playing. And then also dharma sadhyaya, you teach the child to self-study, to get the like a self-study improvement and the self
like the self or self-improvement. So basically you have to show it by your example. You try to develop yourself, the child will also be like that. And ultimately you have to teach a child Dharma Sangha, which means the learning to accept the guru, spiritual master, teacher. And getting the Sadhu Sangha, the saintly association. So there is a time for the child to go to nursery, can be around 5th year. So that's a time called Vidyaramba. It's also samskar for that when the child goes to nursery for the first time. You do like a whole ceremony about it. And then 8th year of life, then it's a time for Upanayanam, which is like the Vedic initiation in the Brahmin thread. So from 6 till 16 you can treat the child as a servant. So from 0 to 6 as a king, from 6 to 16 as a servant. So for that it's best to send the child to boarding school. You know the concept of boarding school? So the child basically goes there and the child stays there. It's not like a daily school. So boarding school is much better than daily school. Because there the child learns to be self-sufficient and independent. And from 16 year of life, you can treat the child as a friend. There, your position as a parent has no much value for the child. Like, you know it also from your own example, when you are like teenage, you try to avoid your parents, isn't it? And you also feel shy, like if your parents come to you to school and like you feel like ashamed that they came for you. And you will try to hide and try to avoid their association. So that's the time when you have to treat them as a friend. So you have to then accept their mood and adjust to that. It's difficult to educate them after that time if you're not their friend, if you still act as their like parent. Because at that time they take the responsibility for their own life, and that's when the time when you are not responsible for their karma. Because up to 16 years, you're responsible for their karma, you take all the full responsibility if they are dependent on you. But after 16, then you have to act as their friend. And this is really important. Because that's also a problem with today's modern parents. Even if you are like 50 years old, they still treat you like a small child. And it's very embarrassing if it's in front of everybody, or the whole family, or in the society, you know. Like imagine you have like some king or some president of a prime minister of a country. He's like an official meeting. And then his mother comes like, "You forgot to take your shoes, I told you 100 times. You know, and it's like, it's a big embarrassment, not just for him, but for the whole society. It doesn't work. At that time, she can do it at home when they're alone, but not in the society, you know. There was a question?
You mentioned that the children should be sent to boarding school.
That's the best, yeah, that's like a gurukul.
So I'm also wondering, if the parents aren't in a position to send the child to a boarding school, they want to recreate that effect of the child being very independent and self-sufficient, what can the parents do?
So if they don't want to send the child to boarding school?
Yeah, if they just can't.
They want the child to follow daily school so that it can be with the child, but yet they want to teach the child to be independent.
Yeah, what can they do?
That's difficult because their parents are showing their dependency on their child because they want to see the child every day. So they are not a good example of being independent either. So then it's difficult to teach them, you know, to be independent. If the parents are not emotionally independent from them, it's also for the child difficult to learn to be independent. And you get the type of relationship like a mama hotel. You know the mama hotel? It's like a bachelor living with the mother.
And she does the cooking, the cleaning, everything, washing, ironing his clothes, and he's just like driving his Ferrari and going to job and, you know, hunting woman. It's not very nice, you know, it's not very good for the society either. Yes?
So, I mean, what if the parents, they do want the children to learn sufficiency, but they're just, for some reason, not in the position to send the child away. So it's not that they're not sending the child away because they don't, they want the child to stay at home, it's that they can't, there's just maybe there's no borders for a baby.
Yeah, then they can sign them for the scouts. You know the scouts?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's good for the boys. Because there is a difference between educating the boys and the girls. The girls, they can learn everything at home. So for them, homeschooling is the best. For girls, the homeschooling is the best. For boys, if you send them to daily school, then and you want them to be independent, it's good to sign them for scouts. Because being in that strong, manly environment also helps them, for boys, to become like men. Previously, like in my country, they would send the boys in 16 years old to army for 2 years, and that was the time when they turned into men. 2 years. In 2 years they could turn from boy into man by being in very strong masculine environment. But nowadays there's a professional army, so there's no more army for the general people. So it's, I can see it's so much different, that generation that went to army and that generation that didn't have to go to army. There's so much difference in the responsibility, in family life, in stable relationships. It's like, it's a huge difference. Because I can see that I'm from that relationship, we didn't have to go to army. I have many friends like that from both generations. I can see the difference.
I also have another question. You mentioned before that if children don't have the love of a mother, they become dependent on drugs or some kind of dependency. But what happens if the child doesn't have that love and affection from the father? What's the result?
Well, then the mother, she has to find some guru or some teacher, some man example that will act as a father. Because single mothers, they should be also protected. So the government should find protection for them. So mostly it's like the Brahmins or some like higher caste people. They take care of the single mothers. So they have that manly example of protection, support and care. Because it is a duty of men to provide for the family. And the woman's duty is to create that family environment. So the man, he provides the house, the woman, she makes the home. The man, he provides the food, and the woman, she makes the dinner. It's a whole scene, you know, having like Italian dinner. You seen the Italian lunch or dinner? It's the whole family sitting together. At least once a day, it's advised that the whole family comes together and they eat together. It's very much advice for the strong relationship of the family. And it's not just two generations, it can be sometimes four generations. You can see it also in Indian families, very strong. Like in one house, you have three, four generations living, and they all can function together. It's very beautiful. In the West, we have like a huge house, two, three people living inside and can't, you know, go well together. It's like nuclear families. It's been very popular. Like the children, they tried, especially even the woman, they try to immediately like disconnect from the family and have own family. It's like, it's not very good. There should be more generations living together, because then they can help each other, they can learn from each other, especially the grandparents. They're very good to educate the children because they don't have that strong emotional attachment for the child, for the children. So they can teach better. Because the parents, they tend to be very attached, and then they teach by saying, you have to do it because I said so, you know. No, you have to spend the time explaining why he has to do it, why is it good for him. That's really important. So you don't command, but
you explain why is it good to do it like that. And you can spend hours explaining day by day, but once they understand, they'll do it naturally. You don't have to explain or command. So that's really important in the parenthood, to explain why. Because hardly anybody is explaining why. Like, I don't remember in the school, they never taught us why. And even in the high school, there was one good teacher, literature teacher, and he told us, like, philosophically, that to answer why is the most difficult thing. But he didn't answer it, you know, so why is it so difficult? Because they don't have the answer. But if you have the answer and you explain by logic, by reason, you spend hours explaining the same thing again and again, the child naturally will learn and will do it also. Yes?
Yeah, so what is... Sorry, is that okay?
Try to be quick.
So what is the psychological effect of the father not being there for the child?
Not being there for the child?
Yeah, what does that...
Well, if the child needs you and not there, the child loses faith in you and also in authority. Because in difficult times there was no authority to support him. So he loses a faith also in God. You know, it's like, it can have a serious psychological effect. That's why if you send the child to boarding school, there is somebody who will take care of this emotional needs of the child, you know. There is always somebody to take care of. But if there is nobody and the child is left alone, so that has a bad influence on the faith in authority. The more questions behind? No? Mataji? To stop? Just last quick question.
So are you saying when a woman's expecting a child, she shouldn't do any form of exercise? What if it's quite...
She can do like light exercise at home. But mostly if she does like just very light home duties, that's enough. That's more than enough. Thank you very much for the attendance and listening. So I hope you'll get something that you can apply.
Hare Krishna, everybody. So.